Okay, so I guess we will start off just kind of with a broad overview, and I don't know if this falls under Sarah or Joe, but I mean, just tell me a little bit about just what you're doing here to address, like, with complex solution innovation. Like, what are you addressing here?
Right, so at OSF Healthcare, as we think about innovation and its role within the ministry, about 2 years ago, we decided to take the specific focus of innovating for our most vulnerable populations. And that really meant creating a group of multidisciplinary individuals who could look at sort of the data surrounding the major determinants of health outcomes for our most vulnerable populations. And so when we think about how we define our most vulnerable populations, we define them as our poorer patients, our more elderly patients, and our rural patients. Because whether we're looking at life expectancy or quality of life, we know that those folks have disproportionately worse health outcomes for a whole variety of reasons, most of which fall under the sort of larger nomenclature of what we call social determinants of health. And so we know when we look at the literature that about 50%, as much as 50% of all health outcomes are actually determined by things that are not clinical. The best predictor of life expectancy, in fact, is your zip code that you live in, and are in this case, maybe your rural tract. And so we find that it's important in terms of thinking about the introduction of new tools, technologies, and innovations that we bear in mind that we, inside of the four walls of our hospital, do not determine the predominant amount of health outcomes that our patients are experiencing. And so we need to be able to partner together within the community to address those social determinants of health, things like food, transportation, housing, et cetera. And so that was really the vision for Complex Solution Innovation, which is our division within OSF Innovation, which I had to address the needs for innovation in how we care for our most vulnerable populations.
Because a lot of times you're treating the patients from where you are after they're already ill. So this is kind of a, well, here's some of the root issues of maybe what may be causing those illnesses or that lower life expectancy, and kind of treating it at the root rather than waiting, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of a foreign concept to some extent in U.S. healthcare because we've been so reactive, so acute care based. That goes back to really the history of the divergence of medicine and public health as fields of medicine, the understanding that public health was more on the prevention side and medicine took the role of more on the treatment side. But as we've kind of transitioned from more infectious diseases as a predominant disease within our populations to more chronic diseases, it's become more important than ever to be able to fuse those two kind of sciences back to think about how we care for the whole person, both preventively and on the acute care illness side.
So you've selected three pilot communities here. There's Peoria, Pontiac, and Monmouth, and Those are different communities. They share some similarities. They're all in the same general region of Illinois. But, I mean, also, you know, Monmouth and Pontiac are more rural. Peoria is more urban. And some of the problems they have are similar. Some are different. So mm-hmm. I kind of just wanted to go through for a second, maybe like all three of those communities. So, I mean, starting maybe with Peoria, like what are some of these social determinants of health you see in Peoria?
Well, approximately about 4 years ago, we embarked on revamping our whole Faith Community Nurse Program. And the Faith Community Nurse Program is really looking at going out into the community and really caring for the intentional care of the Spirit. And what we were doing is looking at community agencies and churches and working out where people actually work, live, and pray, and really developing relationships to really look at more of that prevention before they actually need our services at the healthcare system. And so what we found, we were able to locate two zip codes here in town that had quite a bit of different disparity than the rest of the community. And so we put a faith community nurse in each one of those zip codes. And what we found after that is that we developed through the foundation, we were able to get a mobile RV, and we partnered with University of Illinois, and we started partnering with the churches and just basically opening our doors and really trying to remove any kind of obstacles that that people might have in regards to healthcare, and just trying to figure out if we could help them with transportation or food, or if they didn't know what type of prescription that they needed, or get them signed up for the exchanges. What we really found is while there was a lot of food pantries, there was a major disparity in getting fresh fruits and vegetables. And so with the review of the literature, you know, it's very apparent that, you know, food can be treated as a prescription and that it really can help someone's overall health. So we did a pilot in the 61605 zip code. And what we found is there's 1 in 8 Americans experience food insecurity. And in the United States, it's about 12.9. And the state is 11. And in this Peoria area, it was 15.2%. So we exceeded the Illinois rate. And so we really thought, wow, we've got to put our heads together and we can do better than that. We, you know, it's really a person's, it's really kind of pleased at your heart. And it really is tied very closely with our mission and vision of OSF Healthcare. And so we partnered and we put together a community garden committee. And we have representation from the City of Peoria, University of Illinois Extension Program, as well as the University of Illinois Med School. We have, I'm going to forget some of the people, but we have St. Anne's Catholic Church, the Catholic Diocese, the Peoria Park District, OSF. So we put together any kind of agencies that were part of our community, and how could we put our heads together and really try to promote access to fresh fruits and vegetables and really design a program that was really designed on behavior change versus trying to be a big food producer, because there is a food desert in these neighborhoods and local grocery stores have closed and it's difficult for people to have that access.
So, I mean, about the community gardens, I mean, mm-hmm. we all know the two Kroger stores, the one on Harmon Highway and the one on right. Wisconsin Avenue, closed back in January of 18. And since then, there's been a lot of talk around the community about how do we bring fresh food back to these communities. And we've talked about community gardens. There's been talks about different types of grocery store models, co-ops, so on and so forth. From your perspective as healthcare providers and also, you know, as people working on community gardens, I mean, how do you do this? I mean, what's your part in the puzzle, so to speak?
Right, because we all come at it from different perspectives. So when we met together, you know, the City of Peoria was looking at beautifying the neighborhood, decreasing crime. You know, I keep thinking of Father Don at St. Anne's said, I just want to feed the poor. At OSF, we were also looking at the disparity with chronic conditions and the importance of food in that. And granted, food is only one social determinant that Sarah talks about, but it's a pretty big one. So when we joined forces together, we were able to work with the City of Peoria, and there was empty lots in this area. And so we just started this last June, and now we're up to 2.1 acres. We were able to hire a garden coordinator as part of an OSF. It was like a brand new employee that we have within our healthcare system. And we're really calling out to volunteers, to schools, and really looking at partnering with people to really teach kids and adults the importance of, you know, physical activity, the importance of gardening is from a stress management perspective. We're looking at teaching them how to cook with fresh fruits and vegetables. So the dietitians, you know, have recipes, and then we'll show them different vegetables and fruit that you can make with that. We're really looking at the whole behavior modification and behavior change to really hopefully enhance their knowledge and how that can impact their overall health.
So when you talk about behavior modification, for mm-hmm. instance, if I don't have access to fresh food, and this might be in an urban area, might be in a rural area, say the only thing I have access to is, you know, the dollar store or the gas station, and I have, you know, the canned food or the, you know, the gas station hot dog and soda and that type of stuff. I mean, there's a certain behavior I have to change to reincorporate or to incorporate for the first time fresh food in my eating habits, right? And to cook that and
yes.
to come up to a healthier style. So it's actually not only access, it's also you need to learn some skills, correct?
That is completely correct. And what we're trying to do is really make the neighborhood aware that we're there and that this garden is for this neighborhood. This is like a pilot for this particular area. And so what we did, for example, last Thursday, this will be our second one, we had a neighborhood party. And we invited the neighborhood out, and we gave out 300 sandwiches, chicken breast sandwiches. Everyone that came got a bag of fresh fruits and vegetables, depending on what they wanted. We did free school physicals, dental physicals. We had people signing up for, you know, we had just about everything. We had the health department there. We had legal services that are available to them for free. We talked about how they can come to the garden, and we're going to have certain days of the week that can be like a self-pick. We also give it out to four of the areas in the neighborhood, and there's also a whole dimension when you're looking at the senior citizen group and the access to fresh fruits and vegetables within that. So we give it out to one of the local agencies there. And really the context behind it is we have weekly we have stations, and what they do is they learn how to actually plant something and how you can take that home. So we let them take it home. We also get them more aware of the different varieties of fresh fruits and vegetables and the importance on health. And then we talk about gardening and really having time for your inner spirit and spiritual sense of just relaxation and stress management and how to kind of de-escalate yourself if you're getting worked up. And then we also look at the importance of giving back to the community and working collaboratively together.
Okay. And then, Sarah, shifting back to you here, Pontiac and Monmouth, I mean, both rural communities, they have some similarities, some differences. I mean, what are some of the unique challenges, I guess, that those two communities pose?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think I would back up to sort of thinking what our end goal was in mind for the system. It was really to think about if we were going to seriously address the social determinants of health within our most vulnerable populations, we needed to be able to understand that it was going to take a diversity of approaches. And so what worked in Peoria wasn't necessarily going to work in Monmouth or Mendota, simply because the patients were different, but also the resources were different. The community fabric was different, the community-based organizations. And so we really needed to be able to look across our ministry and our health system and say, you know, where were three hospitals that we thought had surrounding communities that were diverse enough that we could learn different lessons as we work to figure out how to solve some of these most complex problems. And so understanding that Peoria would be different than Monmouth and Pontiac, we took that into our approach and so really defined kind of the top areas for priority with the communities together. And interestingly, one thing that you'll find with social determinants of health is that very often the social determinants themselves will show up in each place. It's the solutions for addressing them that are different. So it's not that usually you would go in and find that food is a huge problem in one community and something totally disparate from that, child care outranks food in these communities when we start to kind of model them to quantitative health outcomes. It's that the solution sets and the fabrics differ. And so the need for innovation and those different types of innovation, which we classify as core, adjacent, and breakthrough innovations, the combinations of those will need to differ. So if you think about rural America as discrete from more urbanized environments, we know that about 2.4 million rural households throughout our country face hunger every year. And about three quarters of the counties with the highest rates of food insecurity are rural. And so though we typically pay attention to urban areas because of the population density, in aggregate, if you can start to think about how you innovate around solving for rural America, it's a worthy challenge when you really think about the distribution of individuals who face hunger on a daily basis. And so as we started to look at our communities in both Monmouth and Pontiac, you know, from a healthcare perspective, I think that we know, you know, if you look at, for instance, the number of kids that are on free and reduced lunches in those communities, they're very high, even in the neighboring community of Monmouth, for instance, as high as 95% of the children in school qualify through those programs. And so we know that the population level is high, but something we were continually running into in these areas was the understanding that even though we knew from the population perspective it was high, we didn't know which individuals when they came to us were suffering from food insecurity. And so though in the Peoria area we had some mechanisms of outreach, which Joe described, in our rural areas we didn't have as many, clearly, food banks or organized community care networks to partner with. But also we had no routine ways of identifying people who were food insecure. So I kind of think about this as both the food insecurity aspect of folks that are going without food. And then I think about this also on the side of folks that don't have access to healthy foods, particularly those with diet-dependent disorders, things like diabetes or congestive heart failure. And so solving for that requires understanding your ability to partner, which in our rural areas, we don't have as many community partners, but we have a lot of folks that are interested in solving this issue because it's so prevalent as they look around them. And so I think, while education and food literacy still plays a role in those environments, starting to think through in those environments as we brought together communities where we know we might have a Casey's or a Dollar General, what is the additive component that we could put into a community like, a fresh food grocery store to diversify the types of foods that folks have access to? And then can you take it one step further to think about how we integrate WIC and SNAP program benefits into that? Are we able then to pull back to places where we do reach patients on a routine basis as they come to us in the emergency department or an inpatient basis? Make sure that we say it's no longer okay not to understand the social vulnerabilities of our patients. We're going to commit to understanding that every time a patient comes to us, we will understand if they're food insecure and therefore be able to connect them to this network that we've provided. There's been a lot of talk about food prescriptions, thinking through how do you create hydroponics so that you're able to hardwire a fresh food supply throughout the year in addition to the community gardens, and the concept of fresh food grocery stores and the role that they play alongside our other providers of food in these environments. And so I think what I would say is that in rural areas, we know that the problem in magnitude size is disproportionately centered there. And a lot of that is around just very basic access issues and distance, which just requires a unique solution set and more innovative models. But the problem overall and the impact of food as a social determinant on a health outcome doesn't change. And the interrelatedness of food to the other social determinants of health also doesn't change. Okay. And so I think it's just thinking through the unique ways in which you can create those solution sets.
So you've been doing these pilot projects for a little while here in these three communities. I guess my next question is, based off of what you've learned, what you've kind of gained from doing these, I mean, what comes next? Do you have plans to expand this to other communities? What's the next step, I guess, so to speak?
One of the things from a healthcare perspective, being a nurse by profession, I feel like a big part of this is education. So if we begin to assess patients for social determinants of health, we need to also educate our healthcare providers and our nurses and other people that work within that environment the importance of, number one, asking the questions, and number two, some of the false beliefs that exist. So, for example, when I did a review of the literature, I was really, I don't know if it was my shallow mind or what, but it was startling to me that 54% of households who experience food insecurity have had somebody working within their house in the last year. And the other thing I thought is a lot of times you can get the SNAP benefit. So I was under the impression that that would help provide the food for your family. And then I also found out that the average SNAP benefit is only $126 a month. And so that was very startling to me because that would be very difficult to be able to live on $126 a month for food. So I think in addition to what Sarah's saying, not only do we need to ask the questions, we need to come up with a very robust plan on how we can educate not only the people that are asking, but also the people that experience it about how they can access the right resources. And I really think we need to be aware that these problems really exist in our society because so many of us have never experienced that to really understand it.
Right. Anything else either one of you would like to add about this or anything else?
Well, I just think that the you know, as we think through what the future holds, you know, thinking across a health system, if we're really going to develop a diverse way of being able to address social determinants of health, that relies on a foundational infrastructure being able to be established across the entire health system, because the resources which exist are different in every community, but being able to leverage them for patients who oftentimes use different parts of our health system is really important. So creating that coordinated community care network is really the vision. As we sort of start to think through to the future, you know, many healthcare systems are starting to think about how they screen for social determinants of health, as we talked about. Few are doing it routinely with patients at this point. They'll do it in pockets, maybe of care management or certain divisions within a healthcare system, but not routinely throughout. And we know that that doesn't allow us to optimally identify everyone. It also doesn't allow us to think towards the future and be able to think about how we use advanced analytics, predictive analytics, to be able to think about any time we touch a patient, whether they're coming to us in the ED, coming to us in a primary care office, or now coming to us virtually through our expanded network of virtual care providers. We want to be able to look at where we know that they live and be able to predict the social determinant conversations we should start to be having with our patients. Instead of asking about them, we should be able to really think through the types of conversations we already need to be having, to make them more in-depth conversations and true referrals. And I think then ultimately you can get to a point where we can think about how we share data between our different social care organizations to create that network of individuals and community members who are caring for each other and creating that social care network. And so I think how we see the future is our ability to continue to collaborate and push the edges of how we can use data to really innovate new care models that are more broad than acute care, that are reaching out to think about how we care for the whole person and whole communities, and really bringing it together as our innovation agenda for the future of what health care should look like. And so that's what I see as the future of the space that we in innovation need to be able to fill. It's putting the most vulnerable populations at, what I say, in the spotlight, so that we can really start to think about leveraging the digital era of healthcare to serve those most in need.
And one of the other things that I'd like to add to what she's saying is the most valuable thing that I've learned through this whole project is the opportunity to work with all of the community members, and many of them are outside of the healthcare arena. So like church leaders, business leaders, the city, government officials. I mean, together, when you truly collaborate, everyone's coming in with a different focus and a different discipline of knowledge. And the impact, when you tie that in with community members and really hearing their voice, the impact of how we can do this together can just only improve your community. And I think it helps you stay focused on what's important and what we should really be striving for.
Okay.
One last thing I did want to mention. I do want to also think about, you know, how we are creating those solution sets really, really matters in terms of partnership. So we've talked a lot about partnering with the community, and how we define community is, I think, ever evolving in this space. And so We've had the good fortune, I think, of being able to broaden our community beyond even local community-based organizations to think about how we partner with universities throughout the state to take a multidisciplinary approach to solving some of these really difficult challenges. And so, you know, even in the last year, we've started an innovation breakthrough lab in Chicago with UIC, which has allowed us to reach across the university and pull different professors with different skill sets to be able to say, you know, if we want to try to think about how we create digital solutions for the social determinants of health, we need computer science, we need engineering, we need social sciences, we need agriculture. How can we pull all those folks together to really innovate and create new tools and technologies to solve some of these issues? By the same token, we had a senior capstone class here at Bradley this last year focused specifically on thinking through the challenges of food insecurity in the Peoria market and how do we create new and innovative sustainable business models to solve for food insecurity in this area. And so I think being able to leverage folks across universities and hone in on the problems that the communities have identified as the most determinant of their health, that's a unique role that innovation in a healthcare system can play. You know, being able to really leverage academic partners to think about some of the most difficult challenges that our patients and our communities are facing, bridge that divide and bring everyone together to be able to create those new and innovative solutions.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you very much, both of you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.